in this, you know, how it's being run presently, Wilna Vajic, they have a certain title that they give for that. And so, it's, you know, they've dealt with it. So people in the field know that that's what that means. So it means that they've studied it, but they were not at all outstanding, you know, at all. So it's... But they feel satisfied they've done something. So we have to make everything like into modules so that somebody studies and they feel satisfied. Also, so that, you know, many times the devotees are coming and going, they can take part of it. Because if someone comes, let's say that class is like this, they come for 2 months, and then they go away, then the tendency will be they won't study the rest of it, because there's been nothing from that. But if you, from that 2 months of study, you actually finish one section, there's a likelihood that then they'll want to then do the next section, like that. So it's all, it's a lot of psychological stuff that for years I wouldn't really deal with or acknowledge. Like that, but I've kind of come to see that for most, it seems to be kind of necessary. You have to make things overly obvious, you know, which is.
You know. As the main principle I worked on with the Bhakti Shastri group in Vrindavan, it's, you know, like the quality of women that I had and everything. I just had to, you know, okay, this point A, I had to get up to there, then I had to work it out, almost purely psychologically. And I did that. Because, you know, like, it was very heavy duty, as I think you saw from my statement from that. I mean, they're very sincere devotees and everything, but they just had a whole lot of stuff they were dealing with. Yeah. Somehow, you know, I thought I was going to teach Bhagavad Gita. You
know. No,
there's a whole other thing going on as well.
Because the thing is if you really try to understand what's being stated, then you come up with to actually have faith in it and try to apply it in your life, then means you have to actually, you know, seriously accept the principles of what's there. Like you take the thing of this one that's going on now, Bali Maharaj, Krishna takes everything away. That means any serious losses we have, we can't blame on anybody. And it's very rare I've seen devotees like that. I mean, just recently for someone who really was seriously losing things and having a lot of trouble, I've only really saw one person just recently who just understood it was Krishna, and every time something more far out would happen, he just laughed about it and understand that Krishna got, he connected why Krishna did that. I did this and Krishna did that. It was kind of like, in one sense, fun for him. But the same person, you go back 10 years, you know, was just, he couldn't talk about certain situations without actually cursing, you know, at devotees and stuff, when he would describe that this one did that and that one did this, and it would all be, you know, very, very obnoxious language. But just with time, the purification and all that, he's really, you know, seeing Krishna's hand in it. But we see some, I would say, Jamnasti was telling me that when there was, you know, there was that one petal of the that Prabhupada lotus for the centennial was something about bringing in devotees from that had, you know, felt disenfranchised and all that. And basically one of the common things practically in everyone, or it was the common thing in everyone, was the inability to accept this thing of Krishna just taking everything away. And it wasn't somebody's fault, this devotee's fault, that one, the management, the, you know, somebody. That was one common thing amongst all of them, is they all felt that they had been dealt with badly, and so therefore, you know, from that side. It means another side is that we take it as, yes, or we have to be more careful how we deal and all that. That's one thing. But the point was, as they failed in the test, when Krishna took things away, then they blamed Krishna and blamed the society and blamed others and all this, and then they just couldn't carry on.
Yeah, but isn't that because they had no shastra-shastras, the canistas?
That could be, yeah. Yeah, that would be there. So it's...
Because I know that's what, you know, like, I'm not saying that I'm advanced or anything, but I know that's what protected me so much when I was went through so many difficulties, is that because my reading of Prabhupada's books was very strong, So then, you know, like things came up, and it was almost like Prabhupada's books were like itching.
Yeah.
Is it just, they're not only sort of tropical that's happening now, but they also forewarn me. Mm-hmm. You know, this is around the corner, watch out for this, this is how you should deal with that when it comes. You know?
Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with my ability to deal with it, it's just that I had some faith in Prabhupada and what he said. And it sort of helped. You know? But if you're dealing with this society of connected abilities primarily, then you're going to react like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a different kind of songbook.
Yeah, but I can understand if you. I understood from what you said last night that the main thing is to build up the culture and the mentality that will accept that. And then the subtleties have to be accepted.
It's good. It means basically, it's not just keep going, because we'll see.
I'll just read the subtleties. If they want to look at a book.
So then, it says basically, if you look at it, it's just a matter of there's the same system, you know? There's only one system. But it's just it's what aspect you want to take of it and who the audience is, you know? Like that. So no one is better or worse, you know? Like in the past, the VIHE is basically geared itself towards, you know, devotees who are sincerely wanting to... sincerely wanting to do some study, but not having much time, and they wanted to, you know, technically go. They would, you know, go however deep the teacher could take them, but it wasn't it wasn't the obligation of the teacher towards the students or the students to the teacher that they had to follow it necessarily. It would be up to the individual. They liked it, they take it. They didn't catch anything, they wouldn't. But if the teacher would do his best, then what can you do in 2 weeks or a month? You know, it means you can have, of course, a lot of influence. But at the same time, it's not the mission statement of the school, is that the teacher at the end of the course has to have created a change in the perception or values of the student. It was simply that they were to present in a very, you know, clear and illuminating way the subject matter that was chosen according to their realization, you know, which is in itself is very, very valuable. But at the same time, it's different than a gurukul situation or that kind of a situation in which the responsibility is that and the hanukkah. That's the responsibility. And then, within that, then...
It's after. It's a mantra. You just have to when you have time.
Okay. Also, that you're working on that dasa mu?
No, I'm going to start that.
Okay. You know, but that's necessary, because there's devotees who they're already busy doing services. In other words, the seva isn't under the direction of the teacher and it's monitored there to be under whoever their authority or wherever they are, their temple or their community or whatever, to watch. So the seva is being done somewhere else. By doing that seva somewhere else, they've developed the interest to study. Therefore, they've come to the VIHE program, and they are there for the time of it. And while they're there, then if they've developed enough, they'll naturally inquire and try to understand what's being there. But the seva will be done somewhere else also. So in other words, the first and the last of the three are being done somewhere else. So only the submissive inquiry and the knowledge that has been given there is going on. You know, so it works. Your audience is basically, you know, the greater ISKCON. And so then from that, the selection means is by those who are naturally interested. So that way, then it's already selected. You don't have to select again, you know, basically, for that. You know, because the situation of lack of time, lack of so many things, it already cuts it down. Because they want to be there, they're there. So then it works. And you see that knowledge is transferred, people are happy. You know, the teachers are happy, students are happy, because the process is working, but it's, you know, it's working kind of in a unique format. You know, like that. Something that Gurijan saw the need for and developed. You know, while in the traditional system, like the Gurukul system, the school itself has to create the interest and has to give the opportunity for the service for it to be absorbed. You know, at the same time as then the whole thing can be monitored. So you only take students in which you feel you can do all those things. Because you're responsible to do it. On the other, you're taking those who it's already been done by someone else. You know? But both are necessary. And it's just, therefore you, in the one, the VIHU kind of thing, you don't really have to have a screening because they wouldn't be there otherwise. But for basically what we're running, there's a lot of, it means also you're dealing with basic, generally, though I think that the horizon will expand on the topics, you're generally dealing with just transcendental knowledge. So that's also then only interesting to certain people like that. While if you're teaching other Vedic subjects, you know, like say astronomy or astrology, a lot of people are interested in that and simply for mundane interest. You know, they'll say use it for Krishna, this, that, but it's very, very it's a very delicate thing to be able to see it in relationship to Krishna, you know, because it's mundane. It may be the best of the mundane, you know. It means the Vedic knowledge is the best of mundane knowledge because it's the most easily applicable into Krishna consciousness. It's basically. How you say the activities of Krishna consciousness removed of its Krishna consciousness, like that means in the spiritual world they do things like, let's say, Nanda Baba and that, they take care of the cows. It's their spiritual activity. So that same activities come to the material world in the form of the shastras that tell how to take care of the cows. But Krishna consciousness is hinted at, but most people don't catch it. So that's the thing, is that you may have a few thousand verses and maybe, you know, 10 or 20 of them are really specific that, you know, there's a God and he's the one that's, you know, running the show. This knowledge is supposed to be used in relationship. But most people catch the, you know, 1,980 verses and they miss those 20. Mm-hmm. Like that. So the Bhagavatam then takes those 20 and makes those prominent and refers to, you know, essential from the other 1,980, so that those who know it can see the connections. And those who don't know the subject, you know, it doesn't attract them or mean anything to them. So like that, so therefore, that's why I personally don't see that there's any conflict between the various systems. Mm-hmm. Though sometimes there's an anxiety that there's going to be a conflict over students. You know, it's kind of like the students or the needs of the students are different, and there will be some overlap. Mm-hmm. There's naturally going to be overlap. There's going to be those in the Gurukul system that are interested in a particular topic that's being done in this kind of, you know, day school format. And there's going to be those in there who will be interested in the others. So, and then there will be those who are just into the one and just into the other.
Also, the point I was making to Jamasri was that, you know, if you're talking Brahminical culture, then you are talking, the unity is in the diversity. Yeah. Because everybody will have their own, you know, like, way of doing things. And, yeah. You know, what's the problem?
Yeah.
But his tendency is to try and sort of put it all together, but I can't see how that works on the Brahminical platform.
It fits together in that you see where, if you have the common like template of knowledge, you know, the Vedic view of the knowledge in that, then you can see where that one style fits in. So it's that you see the bigger picture and you see that everything within that whole template is taken care of for all varieties of audiences. That's how it fits together. But it's not that one of the, you know, it may take, you know, 10, 20, 100 schools to do that. But it's not that one school necessarily interacts with another. No, they're taking care of one, just like within the Vedic knowledge you have. Let's say you have knowledge of music and dance, like that. And so then, but that doesn't necessarily have to fit into this, because it's a very long-term thing. You could do a thing where he brings that in, but then it may cross boundaries, you know, because then he has to get into, you know, consideration of ashram or other things like this, and finding people who commit for that long and that, and it has a totally different flavor. You know, it's just like those who come for the 4-month VIHE courses are different from the ones who come from the 2-week or the 1-month, like that. So in the same way, someone who comes for a 1-year or a 5-year is also going to be different. So then it just depends upon how far he wants, you know, he wants to take. But then as he starts crossing the various kinds of students, then it means he has to deal with different teachers, and that's where it becomes difficult. We had that same problem before when we were running the big school, because the diversity was so much. You had from upper-end Brahminical kind of training to, you know, low-end, unskilled labor kind of mentality, you know, and everything in between. So then the difficulty is, one is students, you know, means the standards can't be that high, because everybody's got to be able to keep up to some degree. So you can't make Girit so specific, it becomes very generalized. I would say, the minor of the problems. It's a major problem, but it's minor. The more major problem is the teachers, because, you know, kids aren't really fixed. You know, they just come in and they take part and like that. But adults, they have specific interests. So some people want to work with, you know, kind of like, let's say, kids with special needs. Others want to work with the kids who are into academics. Others want to work with kids into arts. Others want to work with the kids into, you know, let's say, the Vedic knowledge. Others don't just, you know, who cares about that? We just want to get into the philosophy and the preaching. And I found it's very hard to get all those teachers to accommodate each other. And even more difficult is for each one to accommodate the other's students. The person who's in, you know, dealing with really nice boys can't tolerate the boys that are below standard. They're always a disturbance. They're always being disturbed by them. They're just, because by nature they just disturb. You know, they walk by, they have to pull a leaf off something, thump some kid in the head, and you have to, you know, laugh at it. They just have to. It's just the way they are built. But there are teachers who can relate to those kids and bring them up and make them serious devotees. But in the process of doing that, another student and another teacher and another program is disturbed. So it's that you, that's, if you focus more, it makes it more clear. Even within our Brahminical thing, the reason we have so many schools is just doing this. You know, a very Vedic kind of angle and all that, the kind of students we attract to that are all so different that the standards that on a subtler level of the bigger thing that I just described, we have to do the same thing.
Didn't you say once that there are 32 divisions of Brahminical mentality?
I think it was mainly with, it's probably, you could say there's more, well, you get down to it. You'd probably say there's mainly 18. But within those you get finer. I mean, it's all the branches of the Vedic knowledge. But probably you'd have to say the Vedas, that mentality would be very similar. But within that you'd have those who know the mantras and all that, who are into ritual, others are more into the purpose, more others are more into the philosophy. And then there are those who are into the Sanskrit, but then various aspects of the Sanskrit. You know, those who are into astronomy, but various aspects of that. You know, somebody's an astronomer, another's an astrologer, and many times very different. Or they're astrologers, but some go on birth tars, some go on questions. Like Bhrigu Wallas, they're on questions. While others, they just, whatever you ask, they turn into a chart. And the Bhrigu people don't. They have a separate system. So you could, if you take the finities, you could end up easily like that. And then Shudras, then 64 arts, you know, they come in quite a few major categories. But you could have 15, 20, you know, easily totally different categories. And then within that, there would be fine points like that. You know. Vaishyas, you have 4 main categories, you know, banking, business, agriculture, and the cows. Like this, so you can end up with a lot of variation. And then to say any one is more important than the other, it's like they as long as they have an audience and it's working and those people are benefiting, then they're all important. Of course, as a topic, spiritual subject matter is the most important. So connecting whatever it is to Krishna, that's the most important. But then, you know, somebody's got to do that for, you know, those who are taking care of the cows. At the same time, you have to do the same thing for those who are doing puja, you know, or for those who are doing music. So it's more than one subject's better than another. One school is better than another. What's more important is the subjects within the school are more important. So within it, you know, teaching them how to raise cows is, okay, maybe what the school is for, but more important is that they understand that process in relationship to Krishna, like that. So that element, then if it's there, then, you know, you adjust according to what it is, you know. Some people are comfortable, you know, wearing their devotional clothes when they take care of cows. Others don't. They put on their rubber boots up to their knees and their pants and their sweatshirt, and they go out there and, you know, shovel cow dung, you know. Well, others, you know, they'll wear the regular clothes and put on a gumshoe. So it's like you got to see what you want to create and who you want to gear towards, who the audience is. Like that. So he mentioned is that to see your audience and see who you are, what the institution, what it wants to deal with. You know, it's either you pick what you want to deal with and then look at an audience, or you choose an audience and then see what they can handle. Like that. So there shouldn't be. And centralizing things never work, because then the administration becomes so big that then the actual main considerations are administrative, not brahminical. Because for administration, then it's like, okay, we have these 5 batches of students, they're all studying the same thing. But the thing is they're all totally different mentalities. You put them together, you'll end up with nothing. You know, and you leave them separate, which is harder to manage. So it makes a bigger management. So therefore it's better, it's 5 separate institutions. You know, because Brahmins are not always known for their great administrative abilities. Some are good at it, but many are not. So therefore what the one person or group of persons can actually create themselves, that's the best. Like that. You know, even if it's only they can deal with 10 students, but then they'll get good results out of 10 students. Mm-hmm. And someone else can deal with 100, or like Durvasa and Vishishta. They're both able to deal with 10,000 students. You know, they're just so expert in these. Just they're very good in how to organize and things like that. Yeah.
Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
The seventh of the songs of this section. This is section dainya, humility. A wicked mind brought me into this world, O Lord, but one of your pure and elevated devotees has come to bring me out. He saw me so fallen and wretched, took pity and came to me saying, O humbled soul, please listen to this good tiding, for it will gladden your heart. Sri Krishna Chaitanya has appeared in the land of Navadvipa to deliver you. He has safely conducted many miserable souls such as you across the sea of worldly existence. To fulfill the promise of the Vedas, the son of a Brahmana, bearing the name Mahaprabhu of golden complexion, has descended with his brother, the Abhidhuta Nityananda. Together they have overwhelmed all of Nadia with divine ecstasy. Sri Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, the son of Nanda, has saved the world by freely distributing his own holy name. Go also and receive your deliverance. O Lord, hearing those words, Bhaktivinoda has come weeping to the soles of your lotus feet and tells the story of his life. So here we see the perfection of the humility is that now one is able to take advantage of the mercy of Krishna and the pure devotees. Like that. So by the how you say? Yeah, it means here we have brought ourselves into the material world. If that's accepted, then humility can be obtained. Otherwise, the tendency is to think that it's someone else's fault. It means if it's someone else's fault that we have problems, just like in the story of Bali Maharaj, then when things are taken away, either by our sinful activities or as devotees because of our particular, you know, particular attachments or improper understandings, then if we blame someone else, that means ultimately we're blaming someone else for us coming into the material world like that. Because if we understand it's by us we've come here, then we understand also that by us we are in the situation we're in. Means for a reaction to an activity to come, either as sin, as a sinful reaction, or as Krishna's direction, it's only come because the mentality is not right. Prabhupada points out in that verse 10.14.8 that the material world is meant to correct improper mentality. As Bhaktivinoda mentions here, a wicked mind brought me into this world. So it's to correct that wicked mind. So then the details of that wicked mind is, you know, if whether we think we're the lord of everything or the enjoyer of everything or, you know, the friend of everyone, like that, then there's a mentality, so naturally with that mentality you will do a particular activity. So the reaction to that activity is perfectly matched to that mentality. To help us get out. So the reason that that particular reaction came to us, or situation came to us, because of us, our mentality. So if we accept this, then we find we can accept, you know, that means when we accept that we got ourselves in here, then we can accept these things. Then we can take advantage of those who are helping us get out. That is the principle here. Otherwise, if we don't accept that we got ourselves into here, then we don't feel the responsibility. Then it's someone else's business to get us out. But if we got ourselves in, then we understand that it's us who has to become serious to get ourselves out. Then it becomes nice. So then, and then here he's mentioning that Lord Chaitanya then has come to save such fallen souls. And so then this perfection is then Bhaktivinoda then has come weeping to his lotus feet to take shelter. So then this brings us to the next stage, the next song, the next section, which will be Atmani Vedanam. So we see is that there's a nice progression here, is that he's taken humility to start the whole thing, like that. Yeah, and then so it's just like when we study Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, is we see Sambandha first, what is the relationships, then what is the process, and then the goal, prema. But when it's actually applied in the life, it will be sambandha prayojana avideya. So in the same way as that, when you're studying in its natural progression of you know, how you say, both, yeah, when you're studying it, then the easiest in Sharanagati is that what should be given up, because you want to take up the process of devotional service, so what should be given up? Then what should be done? Because if you haven't given up what's useless, it's very hard to do things that are useful. Then the next step is that, okay, now that's in place, then we have to put ourselves in the right mentality. So Krishna is our protector. Krishna is the maintainer. Otherwise we're thinking, we're protecting ourselves, we're maintaining ourselves. Like that. Then, from that, then we see that, then the next stage is naturally then we become humble and we surrender everything to the Lord. Right? So that's naturally how we would see. Because we see generally the prominent symptom of the Kanista is that he's absorbed in the rules and regulations. At the same time, yeah, and then the Madhyama is absorbed in understanding he's not the protector and maintainer. The subtleties of him connecting himself to the Lord, you know, in a personal way, rather than just through the rules and regulations. And then of the Uttama, of the you know, perfection of humility and surrender, full surrender. So that's natural in that. That would be the like hallmarks of the three. All of it's going on. Same time is to start the process. There has to be humility. I'm wrong. Right? I'm in this material world because I'm a fool. Like this, the material world is useless. Then what will you do? You'll surrender to the Lord. When you surrender to the Lord, then you'll give up those things that aren't supposed to be done. You'll accept those things that are supposed to be done. And then you'll take full shelter of the Lord. That He is giving you, He is your protector, He is your maintainer. So we see that this is also a natural progression. Then when it comes around again, then the humility developed. The humility and the surrender then are on the topmost platform. But to start the process, there still must be humility and surrender to start it. Therefore you'll see in many of the on these songs, you see all different levels. You'll be a lighter, a beginning, basic level of it, and there'll be an advanced level of it. So these aspects will be there. Any questions? Yes.
At some point you said in the material world there is some number for the prayojana.
No, it means when we like study sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, then we generally take it in that order. You know, if we went to approach it theoretically, we'll look at it from that angle. What is the relationship between things? What is the interaction between those things? And what result that will give? But when we apply it, generally we see the relationship between things, we see what we want to get out of that relationship, then we act. Right? So thinking, feeling, willing. Right? So we go, thinking is sambandha. You think about, does this connect with that, like that. Feeling is that I want this. I want this particular relationship. So then it becomes a need. Once it becomes a need, then willing, then I act to get it. Like that. So same here is that you would one would think we would start at this at the rules and regulations. But we see is that he's starting at the end too. Because until you understand the material world is useless and we take that humble position, one can't even start the process. One needs the shelter of the devotees. It's by the devotees that we start the process. We generally say Shraddha is the beginning. But Shraddha comes because of sadhusanga. Right? Then we get the faith in which then we can actually start the process. So here we see now the devotees has been brought in. Before this is he's understanding the material world is useless. But now at this point, then from that mentality, then the Lord has sent the devotee. Then that will take them to surrender to the Lord. And that. So the process is dynamic, it's always going on. You just see is at each level, then there's always things to be given up and things to be accepted. And when you go to a higher level, there's things that before were favorable, now are not. You know, it's just like for the brahmachari, then celibacy is favorable if he wants to study. And he spends all his time studying and doing just menial service and getting no money for it. If he gets money, he gives it away. Then he moves to the next level because of having certain desires. Then the next level for him at progression is grihastha. It's not something going down, it's going up for such a person. So then, for him, the celibacy, giving all his money away and this and that, then is not favorable. So that's given up. But the principles of that are maintained. The celibacy is maintained so that therefore there's only children. There's not intermingling beyond that. And money, he understands, is to be given to the higher authority. So now, instead of giving it to them and they'll use it, now he himself takes responsibility to see that it's used for Krishna and Krishna's services. Like this. And the study is, now he practically applies that. Though he still studies, but he applies that in his life. So it goes to the next stage. Then he goes to the next, vanaprastha, then and the whole economic system and all that, and having children and these, that's given up. It's not favorable for that platform. Though it was favorable for the last. You know? Like this. So each stage then means we find that there's something new to be accepted and something to be. Like the brahmachari is a slav. Right? Then as a grihastha, they have to learn to not be a slav. They have to become domesticated and learn how to dress properly. Like so many times I see devotees in that. And they'd have, you know, very nice clean cloth like that. And, you know, you'd ask about doing something or this or that. And either it's before doing something, they're worried the cloth will get dirty, or they've done something and some dirt has gotten in the cloth, right? And then immediately they're worried, oh, my wife's going to kill me, right? Like that. So then they have to learn to become refined, because as brahmacharis they weren't. So now they're becoming domesticated and refined by the ashram. But then we see vanaprastha in the traditional sense. They go to the forest, you know, for 12 years, not take a bath, not cut their nails, not brush their teeth, and not comb their hair. You know, so they just become, you know, most. Because for a brahmachari to become domesticated, that's austerity. And then for a person who's domesticated, to leave those things is a great austerity. So then you would see that. It's sometimes confusing because you want it to, okay, I already did this, I already gave up everything, now I should move to the next thing, and there should be no more giving up. Or I've accepted, there should be no more accepting later. You know, or I've surrendered, there's no more surrender later. But it's each one keeps going on and on and on. You get to the next level, then there's a deepening of these six symptoms of surrender. Like that.
So for the devotee, the essential point is that we're trying to make the stone into a fish. Instead of like a stone, you put it in water, it'll sink.
Yeah, yeah.
But a fish, you know, you...
Yeah, you can move
it. Flexibility.
Yeah.
Move in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is this called refinement? Is it with respect to social custom or... Your grass is expected to live by those standards of, say, for example, give the example of dhoti and things like that. On what is the criterion on which it's called refinement?
Means, I see. Well, there's a few different levels. Basic thing is coming from ignorance to passion, passion to goodness. Right? It means if you can go from ignorance straight to goodness, then you don't have to worry about it. But if one can't, then that passion has to be engaged. Passion will cut ignorance. Right? Ignorance means you don't do anything, but if there's desire, then you'll do something. So passionless activity is considered better than no activity, right? Even on the material platform. And then coming to the point of the activity is pure, that's even better. Then you go to the platform of real activity, you know? So for this world, it again looks like inactivity. That's why this cycle goes through. And you start it off in one place, and then you go through the grihastha ashram, and it ends up in vanaprastha sannyasa. It looks like the same thing all over again. like that is that one's, you know, being detached, pulling out of. So it's that that's becomes then action and in, I mean inaction and action. Is that even though they're active, they're not active. There's no karma. Like that. It depends upon the individual, being very giving very general points here. Is that generally it's like a grihastha is considered to be a respectable person. Right? A brahmachari is not generally taken as a respectable person. If and as a sadhu, yes, but as other things, not necessarily. You know, it's like a grihastha, it's just like when you hear somebody is the, you know, president of the country, then immediately you just think that they're married and all these things. You know, then if you find out later, well, actually the guy is, you know, the, you know, a bishop or something like that, and I go, really? That's, you know, it's just immediately that it intrigues. How is that, you know? Like that. So then, so it's automatic that one thinks like that. That's, and then naturally then they'll be properly presented. Respectable person, looks respectable, you know, behaves respectable, speaks respectable, all these different things. So it's just, it's a natural thing that people will automatically consider the grihasthas as the most capable in performance of activities, you know. Things like the purely transcendental, then that doesn't apply, because that could be anybody. It could be a grihastha, it could be a brahmachari, it could be a sannyasi, it could be anybody. Like that. But when it comes to like getting material, moving material energy, then generally most people have their confidence in grihasthas. Like that. So therefore, since they're doing these things, it's the natural thing that they expect them to look. Means if one can't, let's say one looks like a slob, no one can have faith that you can actually get anything done. If you can't dress yourself, then they figure nothing else will get done. But if the person is known as an avidhut, completely detached from the material world and only absorbed in spiritual life, then if they look like an avidhut, it actually adds to the image. You know? Then no one minds. You know, they think, you know, it's just because they know that you either have to be spiritually detached or totally spaced out to not understand how you're dressed. Like that. You have these two options, you know. You know, you're either a paramahamsa or a fool, one or the other, you know. The people in between dress nicely, you know. So like that. So it depends upon the situation. So generally they expect to be, you know, something. It doesn't mean it has to be fancy. It's just simple, clean, simple. Whatever it is, you know, it's well put. That's all. It doesn't have to be fashionable, you know. And definitely not, you don't want, you know, foppery. But it's, you know, it's like, it should be. It's just very tasteful according to one's situation. Whatever one is, it should be done properly. Does that make sense?
Yes. I was surprised to hear that the Vanapas has to give up cleanliness as a way of elevation, means to elevate his consciousness. I don't understand that.
Because, see, giving up cleanliness for someone who is not by nature clean is not an austerity at all. It's they're quite happy. Right? You know? But for someone who is so adjusted to cleanliness, like you have a person who, after drinking water without touching the glass to their mouth, washes their hands because their hands are subtly dirty. For them not to take bath, brush your teeth, this and that, is a great austerity. Then, from that, you get to see the body as it is. Right? It means we shave it nicely, we bathe it nicely, we put perfumes, nice cloth, you know, cut the hair, comb the hair, all these different things, then the body seems, you know, fairly, you know, decent. But if you don't brush your teeth, don't comb the hair, don't take a bath, then you really start to see what the body is made out of. That's the body in its pure state, you know. No, vanaprasthas live in the forest on their own. That's the thing. We're not talking about how we apply it. I was meaning in the Vedic sense, the husband and wife who go to the forest and live in the forest on their own. There would be no one else around. It's not an uncommon thing. You see, Vyasa also, he was performing his austerities and all that. So austerities, it means in the beginning they take bath, but as they progress, they don't. Right? It means if you're meditating for a few hours a day, then what is that? What's the lower stage? Yoga Rudha or Yoga Rukshu? Rukshu. So Yoga Rukshu, they will be taking bath 3 times a day. You know, and doing all these things, begging or whatever it is that they do to maintain themselves. Very pakas, sattvic, but nishkam activities. Then when they come to the advanced stages, where they get to the point of dhyana, then that stops. They stop the life air. It means they do it in practice, you know, for however long they're meditating. Before that, they'll stop the life airs and all that. But when they get to the perfectional stage, so they can do 24 hours, they stop and they do that. They don't take a bath or do anything. So they go on. So we see Vyasadeva also, when he would be doing his austerities and that, he wouldn't be taking bath or anything. He'd just be doing some, you know, one austerity, you know, standing on your legs somewhere for, you know, like Dhruva Maharaj did for 6 months. He didn't take a bath then. So we see that Vyasadeva, that's why then when Vyasadeva came, he made a stipulation when Satyavati said that you come and beget children on your brother's wives. He agreed, but he says, but they have to go through some austerity, you know. One thing, okay, these ladies, they're qualified, they married a Kshatriya. Another thing is for them to get the association of the incarnation of the Lord. So, you know, some austerity has to be performed to get such an opportunity. So then, but Satyavati said, well, you know, there is no air at all. So when there's no air, then the people become agitated and other kings, you know, get ideas. So the kingdom's not secure. So he says, immediately you should beget these children. So he says, okay, then I will come as I am. And that will be these girls' austerity. And they didn't pass the test, except for the maidservant. The queens were too proud. The maidservant was very humble. Therefore, her child was the best of children. You know, he was a great, great sage. Like that. So how do you say? These things are there. So austerity must be there. In the beginning it's an austerity to be clean, but once you're used to being clean, that's normal. It's an austerity to not be clean. So the whole idea is to give up attachment to the body. Besides doing this, they also practice living outside. When it's raining, they go stand out in the rain. When the wind's blowing, they stand out in the wind. You know, they get to the point where they don't need houses, they don't need shelter. You know, like animals, they just stand outside. When it rains, they're there. When the wind, they just turn their back. You know? So the whole idea of Vanaprastha Ashram is that one does that. One gets to the point where one can live outside with no shelter. You toughen the body like that. It's practice. You know? You don't do it too fast, you get sick. So they do it slowly, slowly. So you have 12 years to do it.
So, yes. Practice meditation?
Yeah, practice. But it wasn't as important. If the husband was doing it and they served, whatever he got, they would automatically get. You know? You know, you understand? So, since you would see that in the Vedic tradition, then women were very, very satisfied in the household environment, you know, with facilities and methods there. Then for their perfection, there was no need to remove themselves from it. They could either stay at home if there was a son, or they could go with the husband, and then they could still do the same duties there. But it's not as elaborate. You know, you may have a mud hut or a tree, so there's not a whole lot to... You don't have all your fine furnitures and all your different social, you know, functions to organize, but, you organize a few fruits from the forest or, you know, clean up the leaves from underneath the tree that you're sitting under, you know, something like that. So just by doing those, it's still doing the same thing that they're doing. And they can remain attached to their husband. The husband has to become detached from them. So that's another thing that would make it, you know, more, you know, if wife doesn't take bath and brush her teeth for you know, a few years, it becomes a little bit obvious that maybe, you know, it's, you know, how you say, women aren't as wonderful as he thought before, you know. So when the attachment is obtained, but the wife can still remain attached like that. So then he'll do the work, and she'll get the same benefit. You know, it's just like husband and wife don't have to go out and work to get the money. Husband goes out and gets the money, and then they both share in the benefits. You understand? So it's the same principle, like that. So they can do it. There's no reason not to. We see so many times when Prajapatis, and especially Prajapatis, then both husband and wife would go out and meditate in the forest for 10,000 or 60,000 years, and then when they had darshan of the Lord, then they would take up their household life, like that. You know, so it's means if it's it all it depends upon the nature of the woman. If meditation she can do, then she can do. But if not, then there's no need to be artificial and force it. While the man, it must be enforced. Like that. Does that make sense?
Seems to me.
Nowadays,
can you what is recommended for
that person? Basically, it's just they give up the artha and kama. That's the main thing. So dharma is still performed, but for moksha and prema. That's the direction that they head. It means everybody should be headed that direction, but they specifically, you know. So you know, there's no more. They don't work for advancing their economic position. They may maintain it, but they don't try to advance it. You know, whatever comes easily without much endeavor is what they work with. And definitely then, you know, any intimate association, like, and children, like this kind of thing, that would be given up. Because it's not important, it's not progressive for a vanaprastha. The whole idea of vanaprastha is understand more, you're not the body. While the grihastha is, because of attachment to the body, they're learning to engage those bodily attachments in the Lord's service. Therefore it said, offering the senses into the objects of the senses. So they have to know the science of how to engage sense gratification in the Lord's service. You know? So that means immediately it cuts it from passion, though the desires are passion, but it turns them into goodness. Like that, because there's rules how you're going to engage the senses in the sense objects. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the vanaprastha just gives up the offering the senses into the sense objects. That's not necessary. Like that. So therefore then it's more of and the interaction will be then, instead of just on how to make the house run, how to move forward, progress spiritually. You know, they share realization and like that. You know, so it's the interaction is different. Householder, that should be there also, but so much is there is how they're going to run their house, what kind of thing they want, how they're going to, you know, what is their economic situation, what they're going to do with it. Well, the vanaprastha basically just moves on from that. You know, they you know, take up more of the lifestyle of like the brahmacharis, but they're married and they're together. That's that togetherness is more for, I say, companionship than for, you know, spiritual companionship rather than just for, you know, fulfilling the material needs. Does that make some sense? Anything else in this? Okay.
The Brahmachari is not dressing properly. Is he the mode of ignorance?
Not necessarily. You also have to see the sophistication of the brahmachari. But in any case, you take an unsophisticated brahmachari who doesn't have great ability to be sophisticated, and you get him married, to a similar girl, you'll find he'll be more sophisticated than what he was before. Though it may still be unsophisticated. Because
So not just because, you know, the more concerned with the body, more awareness.
Yeah,
the body.
More awareness and all that. But at the same time, is that awareness is also then put there by the women because they're more refined. Just like if you see a male dog and a female dog, though they're both dogs, they both bark and growl and, you know, and do the same things. But you can see the female dog is more refined than the male dog. You know, it's a touch more. You know. Like that. You go down to the pub, and you got the guys at the pub, and you also have the tough ladies at the pub. But the tough ladies at the pub are a little more refined than the tough men at the pub. Right? So therefore, that influence is there. They have influence on the men, and then their refinedness gets developed by whoever they are with. You know? But you know, but the principle is like what Mataji said here, is because they become more aware of the body. Brahmacharya tends to be not aware of his body so much. You know. But when they get married, then they're more worried about that. Right? So that's definitely the thing.
If the husband is making spiritual advancement, the wife receives 50% of this advancement.
Yeah, yeah. She gets equal. As long as she's attached and she's chaste. She's attached to that husband, serving that husband. Then she gets, even without that endeavor to get that spiritual advance, she gets the same thing. It means the wife can be simply dedicated to the husband. He goes back to Godhead. If she's chaste, she'll go back to Godhead.
Spiritual advancement. Does the husband also benefit from that?
Well, be like this. The wife may go back to Godhead, and then the husband, by thinking of the wife, because not being so advanced, then he'll take his next birth as a woman. And then possibly he'll have the qualities that his wife had of being seriously interested in spiritual life, so, and then in that life he'll progress nicely. Then either on his own, then get it together and go back to Godhead, or by being attached to a husband who is Krishna conscious, then attain perfection in that way. Like that. On these things, it's kind of a one-way street. That's why when there's talk about equality, it's actually foolish. When we talk about, means the women who talk about equality are stupid, right? The ones that understand the system and don't talk about it, they're the smart ones. Because it's seemingly looking like it favors the men, but it actually, the system favors the women. Like that. But the point is both of them have to work according to their nature, and then they get perfection. But the nature is different, so there's, I mean, it's like the, I say, I think it's the most well-known of the phrases comes out of France, isn't it? On the difference, isn't it? I don't know how to pronounce it, but something like Vive la Difference or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all glories to the difference. That's why this world goes on, because it's different. If they were the same, then there wouldn't be. Like that. So therefore, if everybody sticks to their duties, there'll be perfection. The wife does her duties properly, she'll attain perfection. The husband does his properly, he'll attain perfection. So that's the best combination, is get two persons who are equally dutiful, then one is assured of success. You know? So that means the husband has to become Krishna conscious to go back to Godhead. The wife can become Krishna conscious on her own, or be attached to a Krishna conscious husband who has attained perfection. So that she has two options like that. So the point is everyone endeavors for their own advancement. But while they're doing that, they perform their duties. Like that. So the husband, he has to take care of the wife, but shouldn't be attached. The wife, you know, should take care of the husband, but can be attached. If she can do it and not be attached, then on her own spiritual, she'll advance more. Like that. But if the husband's a devotee, then that attachment's not a problem. But for the husband to be attached to the wife who's a devotee, that's a problem. Because he's attached to the wife, meaning the body or the soul. Right? Understand? You say, this is my husband. Are you talking about the soul or the body? Technically, it's the soul. But when you sit down at a fire sacrifice, the bodies are not married. You understand? Because the two souls are female. It's not a great arrangement. You know? So because one looks like a male and one looks like a female, like that, and the modes of nature govern that body, so the male form acts like a male and the female form acts like a female. Therefore everybody glorifies this connection. But if you say it's two souls, you know, it's souls, you know, but then it's two females. And so then it's a little weird. Not only that, the two females think they're male. That makes it even more weird. All right. So the only thing that kind of like saves the situation is the body. Does that make some sense? Or? It gets a little weird when you think about it. When you really get into it, it gets kind of funny. You know?
But if the husband comes to the point where he doesn't see that other person as his wife, but rather as someone who is progressing on the path to self-realization and trying to be a servant of the Lord, then if he comes to that point, then there's nothing wrong with being attached to that devotee or the devotee.
To the devotee, to the soul, but if he thinks of the body, then he's got a problem.
But at worst, he will take birth as a woman again.
Yeah. But then from there, if he gets... Because there's so many distractions for the woman. So he could get deviated very much.
His mentality is already...
Yeah, and he's already gone into that direction. So it can keep just going in that direction. You know, once a habit is started, it can just keep going. Of course, hopefully it would be that because of attachment to the other person, because of the working relationship and the duty, then as a woman, it would be the same thing, would be then reversed back, be then attachment for the husband, due to the duties and all that. And if one is fortunate, if one's made some advancement, there's a good chance that one would therefore get a Krishna-conscious husband. And so then that would, you know, ensure that it would be brought back. But it's dangerous. It's dangerous to put it into that category. It means, especially in this age, to take birth again, is you never know what it will be, where it will be.
But how is it possible to not be attached to a devotee?
My point is when you're attached to the devotee, what are you attached to? You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's the point, is to be able to make that fine line. Is it truly just attachment to the devotee, or is it attachment to those other things?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. If it's a woman for the men, it's not a problem. Because if they're spiritually advanced, then they will get the benefits of whoever that they've attached themselves to. Right? It means the fineness. Women are into fineness. So the movements, the this, the voice, the whatever they do, these, you know, whatever little things that are there, it's natural that they become attached to them. Just because of the nature of that combination of intelligence and emotions. So they're always put together. So then they go together. So it's not bad. But for the man, there is a separation of the two. So then, but for the man, for him to become attached to the woman means he's left the intelligence side. It's only emotional, it's pure emotion. So therefore, there's nothing really glorious about it. A woman's emotions are never pure emotion, there's always intelligence involved. But a man's emotions are just pure emotion, there's no intelligence involved. Does that make sense?
Well, I heard you say this a few times.
Well, let's put it this way. Are the women standing up, yelling, screaming, and picking up big, you know, long knives and swords and going out into the field and fighting with people?
Sometimes they do.
Occasionally. That's if your house is attacked, but because of some philosophy or this or that? Look at it. Huh?
They support it.
They support it.
Actually,
for a certain
Chinese revolution, it was men and women.
Huh?
Chinese revolution, it was men and women.
And also, like,
but that's the.
Okay. It's an exception.
Okay, let's. Okay, we'll try it from a different angle. Okay, to protect their house, but it's not a philosophy. They're not out conquering the world. The Chinese women are trying to conquer the world. They were simply trying to get rid of the people who were keeping them from being able to run their houses. But, you know, you get you get all these conquistadors. They just get on ships and go all over the world and just want to take over just because they want to. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference. The women will support it because they won't do it. So now is that which is more smart? You sit at the house and just take care, do all the things you like to do in the environment you like to be in, and have the guys go out and do all this crazy stuff. Does that make some sense? So that's because they're nutty enough to do it. See, it can't be fully understood because it's two different mentalities. Prabhupada said this, man can never understand women, women can never understand man. Because men will do something without applying the intelligence into it. Pure emotion. Though it's said to be women are more emotional, actually men are more emotional. No, we're talking about.
Maybe fine men.
Okay.
Behave like that.
No, that's there, but.
Like brahmanas.
Yeah, that's another thing, but we're just talking about the principle. Just like when we see in the shastras that the women talk about women, what are women? They talk about what's the deep dark aspects of their mentality. That's there, but it's just that if one is trained and one is progressive, one is able to keep those things in line to the point where they may even practically seemingly not exist. But it doesn't mean they're not there. So same way is the male mentality has this. And so by training in that, then one can go beyond it. So the same way as by training, the woman can go beyond hers. But that doesn't mean that women become men. No, when you go beyond, you go into the realm of transcendental. So there is no material desire, so there's nothing to prove there. Same with the men. Like that. It goes into a different field. It's not that we give up the bodily identification, therefore we become a man or men become women. That's actually more gross identification. It seems like it's less, but it's more. You know, like Sukadev Goswami, they call him Hey You, and he doesn't care. Right? Because he's beyond. But when you say Mataji, you know, it's like, what do you mean Mataji? You know, you have to say Prabhu. That means they're more absorbed than that they're the body. It's not less. They're using a philosophy to establish something they want. And they want control, they want to enjoy. And they're not able, not either willing or able to do it through the subtleties of the nature of women, so they want to do it through the nature of men. But women aren't men and men aren't women. How they'll do is different, it's very different. Mentality is different. So that's the thing. So we just give, these points are just there in the Shastras to give us an inkling of how things must work and why we must do. But to technically get into them, it's different, you know. We just said the motive behind, why do they go out to do just to do? It's stupid. Why do they go on their ships and go out just to do? You know, just to have done it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just that they've done that kind of thing. So it's okay for the, once the guy's done it and come back, then it's prestigious. Yes, you know, husband went around and conquered the world. You know, then it's amongst the, in the social system, then the wife will get more prestige. But the point is to risk their life and everything that they have is dear to go do that. The guy goes out, leaves his family, leaves everything. You know, you find that's the wild thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's just the general principle that there's the difference there in the mentality. So we're just saying is when the men get on that side, they're not thinking. Women always think. Like that.
Give you another example. Things better.
Okay. You have a man and a woman get attached to each other and they shouldn't be attached to each other. In other words, it's an illicit connection. Okay? Who makes the plans how they're going to operate all this? Right? Not the man. He's too bewildered by the woman. Right? The husband is so stupid, he's thinking, well, you know, I had the wife there and maybe she'll, you know, accept this new one and, you know, we'll work it out really nice and all that. And the women are thinking, this is crazy. You know? It's the women who are thinking how to get rid of the other one. They make the plan. Because they can think. Emotions and thinking go together in them. Emotions and senses go together. So that's why it's so complex, because it's all happening at once. While men, it's more simple, because it's emotions are working, or, you know, the thinking logically, like that. It's very separate. That's why in certain ways it's so simple. You know? Like that. Women are much more complicated. That's why it's a whole science, it's a huge science, the Grihasthasha, how to put men and women together. That's why if you look into the Dharma Shastras and that, there's just some basic rules for brahmacharis and sannyasis and vanaprasthas. But the whole, basically the rest of the whole text is how to put grihasthas together, men and women together. And then when things go nicely, then, you know, this is there. And when things don't go nicely, then there's a whole half of the Dharma Shastras when things don't go nicely. When the lust, the greed, the envy, the anger becomes too much, you know, because of this involvement. So then, you know, you need some land to have your house on, but you want more land. You want to take your neighbor's land. Then you have to work that out. But why is that? Because you want it for your family. You want to give your sons, you want this, you want that. Otherwise, if you don't have anything, then sitting under a tree is fine. Does that make some sense? Like that. So that's why it's so complicated, because there's such a difference. But it's perfectly compatible. That's the thing. It's where each one is opposite. It's whatever the point is it's always opposite. But it's not always consistent. Men are always on this and women are always on this. It's each point may be opposite. You know, otherwise it would be too easy to figure out. Right? It means men would understand the women. You figure it out and then, you know, one lifetime, two lifetime of that, and okay, then they're done that, now what next? But it's so complex that where it's on one side, then it's the other, you know? So therefore, one can never figure it out. Therefore, there's always the constant interest. Men are wondering, you know, oh, woman, that looks as nice. Or women, men, oh, that looks nice. because it never can be figured out. Right? Because it's a problem here. I mentioned that in the class. It's, one would ask, well, why is it designed that way? Because it wasn't designed for us. It was actually designed for real men and real women. This situation creates great happiness for the real man. Right? Krishna is in control of everything. Right? Everything is going to go exactly the way he wants it, just by his desire. So if you create situations where seemingly it's not going the way he wants it, for him that's great pleasure. Right? Like you have the governor or the president of a big powerful country, and you know he's there, whatever he says people do. But it gives him more pleasure to be sitting there, you know, in the living room on his hands and knees and having his grandson writing on his back saying, okay, now go here, now go there. It gives him more pleasure. He already runs everything. The whole country is run by him. But to be run by someone else who has affection is much, much more happiness. Therefore, we see then when the devotees who want to please Krishna in these desires, then they manifest in the form of women. And then they have all these natures of women. Krishna has 96, you know, what we would call major divisions or aspects of his personality, how it can manifest at different ages and for different devotees, like that. But the Radharani, I think, has something like 290 or 300 aspects that match those same 90 aspects. So there's more variety, more, it's for Krishna's pleasure. So when we want to be Krishna, that means we want to enjoy women. So then we come here to this material world. So now you can't have all men here and no women, or all women here and no men. So because everybody's here to be the man, then they have to take turns. Right? So sometimes, you know, one soul is in the male body and another is in the female, you know, and the rule is whichever you think of, you get that one.
Russian roulette?
Yeah, it's like that, yeah. It's a real wild thing that goes on. Yeah. You know? So it's just a reflection of what's in the spiritual world. Right? We didn't say we hated the spiritual world, we just didn't want to be a servant. Right? You know, everybody here has the same five relationships, same 12 relationships that is there in the spiritual world. You don't, there's nothing, no one's dissatisfied. Is anybody saying, you know, we got to get rid of this conjugal rasa, or this parental rasa, or friendship rasa, or servitor rasa, or people appreciating us, right? Anybody saying? No. They're happy with that. They don't necessarily like how it always goes. But it goes that way because it's meant for God. It's not meant for us. It means only a real male can enjoy the situation here. Everybody else would go nuts. And only female connected to a real male enjoys the situation. Right? But here you don't have real females, you don't have real males. Everybody here is, as we mentioned, everybody here is female. Everybody here thinks they're male. And then you put it by the arrangement of the modes in male and female bodies, which are, you know, imposed. The modes of nature make the feminine body do this and the male body do that. Right? One doesn't do, one can notice it and try to accentuate it, but as soon as one does that, it's noted. Right? You can always tell when a man is trying to be too manly. It's very obvious than when he's just being naturally manly. But naturally manly means what? It's the modes of nature are doing it. Right? If a woman is too feminine, everybody notices that she's on some trip, she's after somebody or something. You know? So then it's because it's being conscious of it and then making their own endeavor to increase it. But it naturally is there. Women are naturally feminine, men are naturally masculine. But by the modes do it, not the soul. Like that. So you have this immense kitchery here of weird mentalities and situations. That's why we can never be happy here, because this is not where it can work. You know?
means we're feminine, so we're not supposed to be serving Krishna. Like that. So artificially taking this mood of the masculine mood, or Purusha Bhav, that's the Sanskrit for it, then creates a problem. So as soon as that's given up, it doesn't mean that one becomes feminine. It means material. Transcendental feminine means one is servant of Krishna. Right? So one accepts that mood, then it works very nicely. Therefore you see the great devotees from the spiritual world, when they come here, even in their masculine bodies, then they're very refined, they're very masculine at the same time, because the modes are taking care of that. But at the same time, they're very, very gentle. Like that. And the women the same. They're very feminine, they're very proper. And so how the relationships work in the spiritual world, that's how it's supposed to work here. It's part of Mahavishnu's dream, not ours. Our dream is we were going to enjoy it. Like that. The dream goes on, and we're the idiots that think we're going to enjoy it. No, only Mahavishnu can enjoy it. It's his dream. So he likes to see men and women put together in a certain way, because that's the way he does it there. You know? He likes his women to behave in a certain way. And therefore the devotees who want to serve him in that capacity act in those ways, because they know it's pleasing to him. You know, and then the men act in another way that's pleasing to him. You know, Sridham and Subal and that, you know, they tell Krishna, we're going to beat you today. Okay, yesterday you were lucky, but today you'll see, my arms are so strong, you cannot defeat us today. You know, yesterday I was distracted by this, but today you'll see. Like that. So the whole masculine boasting and wrestling and fighting, and it pleases Krishna. So some take that mood, and others take the feminine mood. Like that, feminine rasa, you know, the mother showed up, you know, very motherly, you know, completely, you know, distracted by her motherliness, you know, even Krishna's being bathed by the young gopis, you know, he's just her young little innocent child, so, you know, nothing will happen. You know, others are telling her, you know, are you sure it's okay? Oh, yes, yes, they're married girls, you know, don't worry about it. Like that. He's really my unmarried young boy, right? You know, 15-year-old boy being, you know, bathed by these other girls the same age as him. Like that. You know, but she doesn't notice. It's just perfection of, you know, complete motherly, you know, just the son's always wonderful, perfect, and innocent. So that's why you see here mothers are like that. They're completely blind to the faults of their son. Because Mother Yashoda, by her affection for Krishna, is completely blind to anything that would seemingly be improper. Like that. So that's why the things work like that. Right? It means there, Radharani, when Krishna wants to be with Radharani, she tells him to go away, get lost. That makes Krishna happy. Right? Because he is male. But here, the female souls who are trying to be male, when they come across those in the female bodies who do that to them, it annoys them. Right? You know, so like that, it just doesn't work here. It just doesn't work. But because it's so close to what we are expecting from being based on the platform of the soul, means of the spiritual world, that's our conditioning. I mean, that's our natural position. So we can relate to that. Therefore, here, because it looks the same, we think it is the same. Like the tree, we know what a tree is. Though it may be subconscious. So when we see the tree in the water, we know it's a tree. And we know from trees you can do all kinds of nice things. You can build a house out of it. You can get fruits and flowers and medicines and everything like that. So therefore, the illusion is we're trying to get it out of the shadow in the water. The reflection in the water. That's the illusion. But you'll never get it. Right? But the whole point is even if you want to try, you're so attached that you're going to put your attention there. Then if you want to pick a flower, you have to put your finger on the place in the water where the reflection of the flower is. And then, like you would pick a flower, you have to go there and go through the motions as if you're picking a flower. Then you can call it you're picking flowers, though you get no flower. You understand? So therefore, you want to enjoy between man and woman. So therefore, then you have to go to the place where that is reflected. Right? And so therefore then marriage, this, that, and so many things, and then, you know, man has to deal like this, woman like that, and then it looks the same as what it looks like there, though it's perverted. There it's being done for Krishna, here it's being done for ourselves. So then the bridge is then we do those things that we have the desire for, but we give that result or that activity to Krishna. So if we're going to give it to Krishna, it means you have to give it to Krishna the way He wants it, not the way we want it. Right? So therefore, you have to do it in the way Krishna says. Therefore, Dharma. You understand? So it's a very subtle thing, but it's actually very simple. Does that make sense? Since it belongs to someone else, you deal with it the way the owner wants it. Right? Means, let's say you have somebody else's car. Even though you would deal with the car differently, if you really want to be a proper, whatever it is, friend or a servant or something, you're going to deal with the car the way that person wants the car dealt with. Isn't it? So in the same ways, we have this body. So we have to deal with this body how Krishna would want it to be dealt with, if we want to call it Krishna's body. And we would have to deal with the wife the way Krishna would want this body to deal with that body. Otherwise, then we can't say it's Krishna's. Oh, my house is Krishna's. Then, let's see, is it working the way Krishna would work a house? How does Krishna keep his house? Is it Krishna keeps his house real clean? Is your house clean? No? So that means it's not Krishna's house. You may want it to be Krishna's house, but but don't be proud. If you're doing your best and that's all the better you can do, fine, we accept that. And if you want some pointers or advice, then we can tell you, you could, look at this aspect of the cleanliness or that aspect. But if you think, no, this is standard, it's Krishna's house, don't give us, why are you saying all these comments? Then that means we're not really serious about it being Krishna's house. It's our house, we're going to run it the way we want, but we want it to say it's Krishna's house so that no one will bother us. Right? If I say it's Krishna's house, then no one can say I'm in mine. But I'm going to run the house the way I want it, which is mine. Because it's not our house. It is Krishna's house. So that's the subtlety there. So if the mentality is humble, then we see it's glorified. And as soon as there's pride, immediately it's smashed. Therefore the devotee was saying, why do the scriptures in one shloka glorify household life and say it's the best of ashrams and it's the support of all the others, and the other ones it's just, lays waste to the whole concept? Because it depends upon the mentality of the person running it. Totally depends upon that. If one identifies as a grihastha and we're this and we're that and all that, then it's smashed to the ground. Because we're not. Who's the grihastha? We're not even the body, so how can we be a grihastha? It's Krishna's body is being married to another one of Krishna's body, and if a grihastha means then according to Krishna's rules, then they're relating to each other. And if not, if it's not Krishna's, if Krishna's not the purpose of everything, it's grihamedi. Grihamedi doesn't mean nonsense, rascal, demon, meat-eating, fornicating, drug addict person. That's a grihamedi. Grihamedi can be a perfectly Vedic, following every rule and regulation, most pious of the pious. But if their household, the prominent thing is that it's for themselves, or for sense gratification, that's grihamedi. Grihastha means Krishna is the center and all the rings go out from Krishna. It's a simple thing, it's only mentality. We generally take it that Griha maybe means demons, and Grihastha automatically is any devotee, even though they come to their house, they stay in their house, never come to the temple program, you know, never do anything with anybody else and all that, and then they're grihasthas. No, they're grihamegas. Because the house is the center. Like that. So it's a very subtle thing. And all it takes is just a change in mentality. The person could be a grihastha today, a grihamegi maybe tomorrow. And then when they figure, oh, this is foolish, they could again be a grihastha. It's the same way as the soul. He's come to this material world, he can either be a demon or a devotee. Just it's a change in mentality, that's all. It's a very, very, that's all. All the whole process is simply to change the mentality, to bring it from I am the Lord too, I am servant. That's it. That's all that this whole material world and whole material endeavors for. It's only that. Change that mentality. But changing the mentality means taking it to a complete change. So complete change in mentality and service then matures in prema. Does that make sense? Like that. So these are the things, the subtleties are the points. The gross things are simply to create. It means because of our material desire, then that has created the subtle body. The subtle body then pushes on the gross body, which makes our activities. So because we can't catch the point of just the simplest thing is just here, I'm servant of Krishna. Like that, you just surrender to Krishna. What am I doing? I'm foolish. I just surrender to Krishna. That's Krishna's first option. Just do that. Then it's easiest. But if you can't, then you come down how far you need. Then you start pushing on the body, which then has to then, to maintain that, to be regular like in sadhana. Then that means the mind has to adjust to that. Because the mind can't do for a long time things it doesn't want to do. So that means the mind has to adjust to it. So then when the mind adjusts to it, then it's natural, then why is it adjusting it? Because there's a higher purpose. Then that will adjust then the consciousness. Like that. So therefore, we're just using basically reverse psychology. You know, we've gotten ourselves into this mess by the one, and it's resulted in the gross body. So we take the gross body and engage it in Krishna's service, even though the consciousness of the subtle body isn't. By engaging that, then it'll change the purify and change the subtle body, which will change the consciousness.
But it's consciousness which is employing the gross body, isn't it?
Yeah, so therefore, if you regulate the gross body, it has to have an effect on the rest. You know, frontwards and backwards, it has effect. So when you actually get the change in the subtler level, then the gross level becomes easy. In the beginning, you know, your temple commander tells you to get up, temple commander tells you to wash your pots, temple commander tells you to do everything, because by nature we do nothing. Right? So after a while, when we get used to that, you know, like that, or we accept that in the mind, yeah, this is nice, I like this, then it becomes very easy to do. We get up without him telling, we know we're supposed to wash the pots, so we go there, he doesn't have to come looking for us and preach to us to, you know, you got to serve Krishna Prabhu and all these kind of things. We just know we're supposed to wash the pots, we just do it. Because the subtle body has accepted it. Like that. So then it becomes... So that's the difference between Vaidhi and Raganuga. Vaidhi means you're doing it because it's supposed to be done. Raganuga means we've accepted that this is normal.
But in all cases, isn't it the soul which is actually directing the activities?
Yes, but what is the mentality of the soul?
Based on hearing from...
Yeah, based on hearing, but the thing is what the soul has basically two manifestations of consciousness. I am eternal servant of Krishna, therefore we're serving Krishna in pure love. Or, I am the controller and enjoyer. There is a tatasta position, but how long can anything remain tatasta? Not very long at all. Understand? It can't remain. It has to go one way or the other. Energy has to have shelter. Right? So it's going to take shelter of something. Therefore, it's either going to go towards Krishna or go away from Krishna. It has to go somewhere. You can't remain neutral forever.
You said about how from the consciousness it expands and goes to the gross body.
Yeah.
So when we reverse the process, it begins with consciousness, isn't it?
Of course, it begins with consciousness, but the prominent thing is because the consciousness is in the body, therefore you work on the body. Consciousness had to change something just to agree to work the body. But because the consciousness is in the body, therefore you have to work the body. Right? That's why then in the Grihastha ashram, because there are needs of the body and of the subtle body, of the emotions, therefore the rules are applied there. You understand? That's why they're applied there. If those needs aren't there, then there's very less rules on the body. Right? And then the rules are more on subtler aspects. What is your motive behind the thing? Right? It's understood, grihastha life means there's some motive. But if you want to give up motives, then that's another thing. Right? So that's why then in the process of devotional service, its main emphasis is that, giving up these material motives. But to do that, then you have a desire, so by performing that desire, but doing it for Krishna rather than ourself, that purifies it. So immediately it's taken out of the realm of karma, so you won't get a karmic reaction that will increase it. It'll decrease it. Therefore, we find that the grihastha, by doing all their grihastha duties, but for Krishna, they advance, they purify themselves. Otherwise, why would they be purifying themselves? But if they don't, they do it for themselves, you see, they get entangled. Like that. It's simply that. So any of the ashrams, any of the varnas, if they're taken and used for Krishna, it purifies the attachments that are there. If one finds oneself, let's say, in a situation where they're a shudra, it's because one has those attachments. One wouldn't be born there unless one had those attachments. One finds oneself born in the Brahma family. It's only because you have those attachments. Otherwise, you wouldn't be born there. Someone could say, no, no, didn't want to be there, this or that. But we've done an activity to put ourselves there. You understand? Means one may say, well, okay, give an example. You have King Riga is a lizard in a well, so he didn't want to be a lizard in a well. But he did want to be a lizard in a well. Otherwise, he would have been more careful when he was dealing with the Brahmins. Because being lax about dealings with the Brahmins means you want to be a lizard in the well. You understand? Just like if you want to steal, means you want to be caught and put in jail. Because that's the result. You know, people will say, no, no, but that's what the two go together. Just like I want to overeat means I want to have a stomach ache. You know? But people, they deny that, but that's the reality. Because you do the one, and this is what happens. And they'll say, no, no, but this guy stole, didn't get caught. That's today, maybe tomorrow he'll get caught. If he doesn't get caught here, depending on his karma, he'll get caught next life. But he will be caught. No one gets away. So it means we want those things. You know, just like you say, I want to get married, means I want to have a house, I want to make money, I want to fulfill the needs of my dependents, you know. Like this, it means that. I want to, you know, interact with a broader family, I already have one family, I want to have more family to interact with. It's not enough having one set of parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and nieces and nephews, I want to have another. That's what it means. And then it says, I don't like all these relatives and, you know, all this economic development and, you know, and having to sit and talk with my wife and I, you know, but then you're denying what you actually want. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. So that's why then it's recommended that one approaches this with the purpose of spiritual upliftment. Because then one will deal in these situations in such a way one will dissolve all that attachment, and then there won't be any more of it. Because what we actually want is we just want to be happy. That's what we actually want. That's what we're looking for. We found a solution to have this desire. I'll be happy by fulfilling that desire. Right? But the purpose is to get happy. If we get happy by another way, we do it. Right? You find somebody who's very happy, let's say in sports, many times they don't get married. Right? They don't go to school. Right? Or somebody's really serious about their education, they don't get married because they have to do this. Or they're very serious about their business, they don't get married because they have to put their attention into there. Does that make sense? Means
what's the conclusion?
The conclusion is that you're finding some satisfaction somewhere else. So therefore, you don't need another thing. You do one thing, you don't need another thing. You know? But at the same time, as you'll see, is generally the one is for the other. You know, they're doing the business nicely so that everything's set up so they can get married, and it'll go nicely for them. But my point is that the point is you're trying to be happy, whatever it is you're doing. And if you can get the happiness in one place, you don't worry about another place.
But generally you can observe that even if somebody has an interest in something, they may not want to get married or something else due to the sake of responsibilities. But they'll achieve the same enjoyment order through improper means.
Yeah, because the goal is what? Is to become happy. Right? But if they do it through improper means they want to be unhappy in the future. Point is they want to be happy. So therefore, if you can be happy by Krishna conscious means, therefore there's no need of material endeavor. So to that degree that you can put it in the one and the less in the other, to that degree that you can perform your devotional activities. Right? So someone with more attachments, then they need to situate themselves in an ashram or varna that matches that. Or a situation within that ashram or varna that matches that. You know, they'll have some Brahmins have so much, like you see someone like Drona, he had needs, so therefore he required half a kingdom, the prestige of teaching the most powerful, Kshatriya house in the world. You know, he needed a certain caliber of student. All these things he required, so he had vast wealth and power. You know, while you see Sudama Brahman, he didn't have those needs at all. So therefore he just sat in his house and studied and this and that, and whatever came, then he lived off. You know, nothing came, that's what he lived off, nothing. Right? So we have both these ends. Of the two, means the principle is whatever comes easily without much endeavor. That's the best. You know? If by very little work you can have so much, then that's just what's due to you, and then you just take that which comes, because you have to be active, you have to do something. So then you pick a lifestyle that you can relate to doing, and then whatever comes from that, then you engage in that. You don't desire more. You know? And then if you, by having less needs, you naturally have more than what you need, then you give that away in charity. Does that make sense? Or if somebody by same work gets a lot of things, then that means then they can use all that for Krishna. So they may live more opulently, but then they can do so much with those opulence. But it's what comes with just a standard amount of endeavor, not what comes from more. Right. It means for your own purposes, the Prabhupada mentions you shouldn't put in more than 8 hours a day. That's ideal. His economic development should be limited to 8 hours. What you can get in 8 hours, be happy with. And if you can, then work more. Just means less Krishna. Then that means faster.
Just 8 hours for serious devotee. I mean, where do we do
it? Means if you can do it less, it's fine. But the point is, this depends upon what is important for you.
If suppose somebody is working for 8 hours, could we consider? I mean, he could not initiate. Or what's the?
No, it's not a thing of initiation. This, that, anything. It's not like that. It's just a matter of why spend more time for your own economic development. You can spend 24 hours serving Krishna, you know, and if from that service you're being taken care of, fine. But you're doing, you know, are you doing that service because you'll be taken care of, or are you doing the service because it pleases Krishna, and then you're taken care of? Krishna's my maintainer and protector. I serve him, he'll worry about that. Or, I'm doing this service because it gets me my facility. Right? The first one creates no problems. The second one creates a lot of problems. Right? Therefore, you find devotees fighting over positions and this and that. You know, not so much that it's like their nature is perfectly suited to it and someone else is not, so therefore better they don't do it and I do it. But it's along with this position comes these facilities. That's the difficulty.
Yeah. So the prerequisite, the second option you mentioned just now, would be to at least give 50% of the income to purify the fruits of the activity.
Yeah. Okay. So that means you have a service, you want to do this and that, that 50% should go into that.
Mm.
You know? You're doing some preaching or you're doing some particular service, just put it into that. It doesn't mean you have to give it away to someone else. It just means it's not for you. You know? And then that other 50%, then that's for yourself, your dependents. Like that. You know, 50% is for, you know, whatever your service. If you had no service, then give it to people who are doing service. And then you get the benefit of their service. Like someone is doing some traveling, you know, preaching program, you give it to them, you get the same benefit that they're getting from doing it. You know, it's the same principle. Just like the wife serves the husband, whatever he does, she gets half, because she's serving. So the same way as you render service to the preacher by giving him money, then this preaching benefit he gets by doing the preaching, you get the same benefit without doing it. Like that. Because service has been rendered. Like that, you know. So it's the same principle. Like that. You know, people give tax, and then that means also the karma goes. Right? The karma goes from the people to the king, not the other way, because he takes the tax. He's taking the service. Right? And so he has to give that back in service, and because he's rendering service, therefore the tax. Right? He's, because the person is preaching, therefore he can accept money. You know, if he's a grihastha and he's not a Brahmin, he can't accept money. Kshatriya Vaishya can't accept money. They can't accept charity. Like Arjuna, you see, so many times he does something, saves somebody or defeats somebody and doesn't kill them, and they want to give him a gift from that, and he won't accept it. He absolutely won't accept it. You know, because he says it's my duty to do this. You know, Maya Dhanava surrendered to him. It's his duty to protect him. So he can't get something for that. You know, Angaraparna, he defeated him. He dragged him over to Yudhishthir. And Yudhishthir, you know, freed him. So then he wanted to give something to Arjuna because he didn't kill him. So that's my duty to free you, my brother said. Like that, so I can't take something for that. So Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas can't take charity. They do their cheating. Like that. Brahmins can take. But that means they're doing Brahminical activities. You know? The Brahmin takes up business and accepts charity, it's not so good. You know? They can do it. It's just not good, but it's not sinful. But for a Kshatriya Vaishya, it is. You know, Brahman should stick to one process. He can do many if he has more needs. But the less needs he has and the less he generates endeavors for, then the better is the situation for that Brahman. Because then more time he has for Brahminical activities rather than economic development.
And if somebody may be working, but the income generated from that may not be sufficient, 50% of the income may not be sufficient to maintain the family and all that. So what does that, does it mean that he has to work more to get more money, or how does it adjust it?
Yeah, well, it's like this. Okay, let us say one is going out and one has a job and he's making, let's say 10,000 rupees a month. But it's not enough to maintain his family. So if he really wanted to do well, he'd have to go get another job or work more, you know, do special projects, say 15,000. Okay? But, you know, just for example's sake, then you go down the street around the corner and you have people that are living on 1,000 rupees a month or 500 rupees a month. Right? So therefore, they're living. So if you lived at their standard, then you'd have 9,000 rupees if you give in charity. Right? So therefore, it's if you work at the principles, you're supposed to give that much in charity, then that means then you'll adjust your lifestyle for that. Right? That's the thing. Do you set your standard, or do you set the standard and then endeavor for it, or do you... what comes in, then you adjust for it. Because ultimately, what happens if you lose that job and you only have 5,000 a month? Are you going to stay in your apartment that costs 5,000 a month? No, you're going to give it up and move to something that costs less by force. So then it's a matter of whether it's done by force or by voluntary.
Sometimes it may be a combination, isn't it? But for example, suppose the apartment is big enough to have a program. So maybe the rent of the apartment could be a combination of both.
That's fair. Okay. But you have to see that that's actually what's going on. You know, you have a program once a year in your house, and the rest of the time it's kind of parties. You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? Means you know, the reality is reality, is what's actually going on. So that's the thing. You can say so many things. So yes, we have this video for, you know, we can show Krishna conscious, you know, things, but how many videos that devotees have they're watching Prabhupada movies in reality? Right? So that's the whole point, is what's the, you know, they have a car, yeah, we can go to the temple program, but are they actually regularly going to the temple program? No, it's being used for other things. That also. You know? So it's the fourth standard. You know, they're working, and they give something to Krishna. Best is they give all, but at least they give something. Recommendation is 50%, but whatever it is, something's better than nothing. It shouldn't be zero. But each one just has to see oneself. It means if one is here, one is doing service for the pujaris, and they're giving you something a little bit to take care, this and that, it's not necessarily that you have to give 50% of that, because they're only giving you just how much it costs to, you know, maintain. They just, instead of giving you the stuff like they give the brahmacharis, they just give you the money, so you don't have to use the bar of soap that they buy. You can buy which bar of soap you like. You know, so it's not necessarily there, but one should keep from that something for emergency. Like that. That's there. But otherwise, it's, you know, that's a different thing, because you're already doing all your time for the temple. So this is just, they're giving you something to... So you're not, then you're working for Krishna. So in working for Krishna, there is no purpose of economic development. It's only working towards liberation. Does that make sense? So it's slightly different than if you're doing something that generates income. It's a different thing. Kolavecha Srihar was doing business. Therefore, 50% went towards the worship of the Ganga. Or if you're taking, you know, your occupation is amrita, or begging, or rita, like this, you're going out and collecting, you're making endeavor, then something should be given in charity. But if you're just doing service for the temple, then that's your occupation, is just serving the deities. So then you're just getting whatever the deities give you. If you get a lot, of course, then you should, but otherwise it's just bare minimum. It's a different kind of thing. Right? That makes sense? Okay, so we should stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.